Upfront on the Voice of America, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Thank you for joining us. As environmental activists and world leaders converge in Egypt for the COP27, the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres opened the meeting with a warning that the world was, quote, on a highway to climate hell with our foot on the accelerator.
This UN climate conference is a reminder that the answer is in our hands. And the clock is ticking. We are in the fight of our lives, and we are losing.
That is the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres addressing the opening of the COP27 meeting in Egypt. Guterres echoes the voices of many environmental activists who say that even though Africa emits the least carbons, it is the most affected by climate change. But how do you explain some of these complex concepts to people in rural areas across Africa?
If you notice now, the rains that come as hailstorms and even come a lot later than you would have expected them. When the sun comes, it is scorching heat. Therefore, to be able to ensure the posterity of your children and grandchildren, let's pursue simple things. Let's plant trees.
That is Joseph Masembe, a Ugandan environmental activist. He says that given the urgency of this issue, he needs to see more action and less talk. In Egypt, the summit began with a milestone agreement, with countries agreeing to discuss payment or compensation arrangements for climate damages and what is known as loss and damage. And so, there's a consensus that more needs to be done by the rich nations to find solutions to support those in developing countries where millions face climate losses and damages. Many of these communities have contributed the least to greenhouse gases hitting the planet, and yet they're the ones suffering the most. So we asked you, who should pay for climate loss and damage? This is what you had to say.
My name is Isaac Akogiziwe. I am a student of mass communication at Kampala International University. On the question of the world superpowers paying African nations or smaller nations because of the damage they do, climate-related damage. Yes, I support it. Why? Because poor nations, let's say African nations, produce less when it comes to emissions, which threaten the environment and cause harm, leading to climate change, acute climate disasters. So I think superpowers should be paying the poorer nations because of that, because superpowers produce a lot of emissions that destroy the environment, up causing climate change and all the disasters we've been seeing in the world.
My name is Aloki Jennifer Slivia. I'm a mass communication student at KIU. I believe they should pay us because once they pollute, we are getting infected. And this affects us greatly, and we're the ones to pay for our own bills. So I believe they should pay us on that.
I'm Kerry Runji Patience. I think the rest of the world should be paying for that damage they are causing. Cause if at all we are contributing 4% and they are contributing 96%, that means there is a high damage they are causing on our property. So they have to, compensate for the damages they are causing to us. Because if it's green environment, they have affected it. We shan't be having rain in the coming days. So they have to compensate for that.
My name is Olipot Andrew, and I'm in Kampala, Uganda, Africa. Well, there is no estimated amount for which they can pay. All they can do is to start seeing the dangers and do some affirmative action, because there is no amount of money that can compensate for all the damage to people's livelihoods. I'm talking about crops basically, because mostly of African countries depend on agriculture. There is no amount of money that can compensate to all the flora and fauna loss.
Many thanks to all of you for your opinions. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Now, as world leaders and environmental activists converged in Egypt for the COP27 meetings, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres set the tone, warning that the world needs to act soon. He called on developed nations to find ways to reduce carbon emissions. He also warned that the planet was fast approaching a tipping point that will make climate change irreversible.
This UN climate conference is a reminder that the answer is in our hands. And the clock is ticking. We are in the fight of our lives, and we are losing. Greenhouse gas emissions keep growing. Global temperatures keep rising. And our planet is fast approaching tipping points that will make climate chaos irreversible. We are on a highway to climate hell with our foot still on the accelerator.
Guterres also called on developed countries to take the lead in the goal to achieving global net zero emissions by 2050.
Human activity is the cause of the climate problem, so human action must be the solution. Action to re-establish ambition and action to rebuild trust, especially between North and South. The science is clear. Any hope of limiting temperature rise to 1.5 degrees means achieving global net zero emissions by 2050.
That is the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres speaking in Sharm el-Sheikh at the opening of the COP27. And for decades, developing nations, especially in Africa, have been calling for industrialized countries to provide compensation for the impact of climate change on their communities. And this week, as negotiators met in Egypt, there was a breakthrough as they were able to place the issue on the formal agenda of this year's climate summit. And as global leaders work to figure out the details on what the loss and damage payments will look like, including ways to measure loss and damage and how they would compensate victims of climate change, climate activists like Uganda's Joseph Masembe worry that this yet would be more promises and less action. I reached Masembe by phone at the sidelines of the COP27 in Sharm el-Sheikh.
I mean, this week, COP27 started in Egypt. How different is COP from the previous ones over the last couple of years? Or what are some of the demands from people like you, activists who are working on the environment and climate change?
Unfortunately, I'm not very upbeat about this COP27, even if it is happening in on the African planet. Because if I can recap a little bit, we just came off the throes of COP26, which happened in Glasgow, in Scotland. And in Glasgow, in Scotland, we created something called a Glasgow Climate Pact, which kind of settled some of the issues that were expectant from countries, of 145 countries that turned up in Glasgow. One of them was, we need to double climate finance. We need to increase, like the rich countries like the US and the UK and the rest of them should increase the kind of financing that they put towards climate change. Also, there were individual country pledges that we'll all commit to reducing our greenhouse gases and stuff like that. Then we had for the first time China and the US reaffirming their commitment to combat climate change and implement what was the Paris Agreement of 2015. Now this was 2021. Almost 6 years later. Then, of course, there was a general pledge by over 140 countries to halt deforestation in their countries by 2030. So this is where we're coming from. The biggest problem with all these COP gatherings is that they are all talk, and there is no action. The timelines between November, when one COP happens, and the next November when the other happens, does not give people enough time to implement any of the things they agree on. Well, we talked about increasing climate finance in 2021. Up to today, you cannot really see where the climate has been increased, climate finance has been increased, and where it has passed. So one of the things I think, it has become a poster child of environmental organizations and also for countries. They walk in saying want to increase finance, then the big countries say, yeah, I think we are right, we need to do enough. They make glorious speeches, they promise to increase the money, they get back in their planes, and they go back to their countries and they keep doing what they do.
You don't sound very optimistic that much is going to happen. What would you say are some of the impediments or the challenges to implementing some of these commitments that have been made, say, last year in Glasgow?
I think it is one or two, three key things. First one is, there is too much talk and less action. Much of the talk is rhetoric. People have learned the bravado of walking into these gatherings and making speeches and anecdotal talks
and a couple of quotes of Mother Teresa and the rest, you know, making it seem like, you know, did you hear that speech? You know, Biden is committed, Rishi Sunak is committed, this is, everybody is committed. But at the end of the day, nobody is putting their money where their mouth is. That's the first thing. Secondly, there is a disconnect in what we call the global north and the global south. The global north are the developed countries. The global south are the underdeveloped countries, the ones that are just trying to step up their game. Now, across the board, there is a discussion that we need to stay away from fossil fuels, which includes mining oil and all these other things. A country like Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, all of these people have just discovered oil. With the rising debt burden that they have, all the problems of their GDP and their economies, they are thinking to themselves that, you know what, this oil is going to be the goose that will lay the golden eggs. It will take us out of our poverty levels and drive us towards middle-income status. Now, the global north and the general discussion is, let's keep fossil fuels in the ground, don't mine the oil. Don't mine the oil. Now, how do you tell that is wallowing in debt, not to mine its oil? In the global south, in Uganda, in Africa, for most of the countries, they don't have access to energy. The disconnect comes from the idea of the global conversation to transition to more efficient energy sources. But that only works for the Western world, who have been mining oil and coal for centuries and centuries, and they can now transition to nuclear energy, to solar energy, to wind power energy, that kind of thing. But African countries that have had nothing, have been focused on firewood and charcoal, cannot transition from firewood and charcoal to wind power or to nuclear or to solar.
Now, is that because of a lack of resources or because of a lack of willingness or lack of knowledge or understanding of some of these technologies?
It is lack of resources. If you find a person in the remotest village where electricity has not yet even reached them, you cannot tell them that, you know what, you're not going to do firewood, you're not going to do charcoal. Even in a country that is wallowing in debt, you cannot tell a country that is wallowing in debt that since you have discovered oil reserves that can help you boost your economy, please keep them in the ground and keep paying interest on the debt that you owe us. They can't, because that is the only way they can leverage. It would take about $2 trillion a year to subsidize African countries from mining their fossil fuels. And that is, we would need $2 trillion in Africa alone from now until 2030 just to create a subsidy.
Masembe, some people have argued that since most of the carbon emissions, some of the climate change impact that we see right now is mostly affecting African countries, but that African countries emit less carbon. Where do you stand on the debate that the West should actually be the one paying Africa and Africans for some of the changes in the climate?
I'm for that 101%, because look at the U.S., for example. The U.S. has emitted more greenhouse gas emissions than almost anybody in the world over the past couple of centuries, because they have been doing this. So you have China, you have the U.S., you have the Western world, which we call the global north. And these people are the ones who emit the most. But the brunt of that is borne by countries in the global South. Africa, for instance, are the ones who suffer the most. Secondly, you find that, for example, they tell you, oh, you know what, it's okay. As we are meeting, let's go and replace this with carbon credits. Go and plant some trees in the Amazon forest, in the Congo forest, etc. So they are the ones who determine the price of the carbon credits. They are the ones who emit. They're the ones who determine the pricing. So at the end of the day, they just pick a little bit of profits and say, let's throw that out to confuse the world. At the end of the day, they should be bearing the brunt of that. If they want African countries to keep their oil in the ground, they should say, okay, if the countries have a debt with us of X amount of dollars, we'll forgive this debt for the next, write it off. But that means that you do not mind this all over the next, I don't know, 10, 20 years. Next, we'll give you this amount of money to support your development. Because when in their heyday, they decided to mine their oil and their coal and everything to support their growth of their industries and everything, the Industrial Revolution was supported by mining fossil fuels.
So, Masembe, as a climate change activist yourself or as an environmental activist, when you're having conversations with people in Uganda, let's say somebody in a rural area, how do you explain to them the concept of climate change? How do they understand it?
At the moment, that is why the Little Hands Go Green philosophy has worked a lot. Because for us, we move on from the broader concept of climate change and tell them, listen, you have children and grandchildren that you have given birth to. If you notice now, the rains that come as hailstorms and even come a lot later than you would have expected them. When the sun comes, it is scorching heat. Therefore, to be able to ensure the posterity of your children and grandchildren, let's just use simple things. Let's plant trees. Let's plant as more trees as we can. Like when the rains come in the future and they are coming as hailstorms, these trees will act as windbreakers. They'll protect the crop yields, etc. That is the only way we are breaking through. It is mindset change, nurturing them, and working with the brains of the people, working on the mindset of the people. Because when you explain all the mumbo-jumbo of climate change, of etc., they will get lost. So it is localized, the messaging and the conversation, to suit the average person on the ground.
That was Joseph Masembe, a climate change activist and founder of Little Hands Go Green, a tree planting initiative targeting young children in Uganda. Let's take a quick break and listen to more of your opinions. We'll be right back.
My name is again, once again, that is Joseph Tatisio, a South Sudanese born. Of course, it is not all that the world is supposed to pay us, because they are costing us a lot. It is just that if they could find ways of minimizing, so that of course also we are affected with the pollution that is around the globe. Possibly it is causing us a lot, bringing in a lot of issues within us. Some are dying because of that and so on. So that's it. So there's no need of them paying us, but they would just find a solution. If they can find a solution of making it possible to eliminate it, the better.
No, because what they are doing, also for us, we benefit from it. Like the factories, our people go and work in it, and we get something to maintain us. That's what I can say. Because they shouldn't pay us, because all of us, we are benefiting. Though we are affected, but also we are benefiting something out of it.
Bruno is my name, and I'm a South Sudanese. I think the outsiders should be paying the Africans for polluting the world, because this earth belongs to us all. It's not only theirs. Since they are the ones who are contributing most of the destruction of the world, they should, of course, pay Africans for that. That's what I think.
Actually, definitely, they have to pay us. They are the ones who have destroyed our environment. During colonial eras, they took away our minerals, everything. Now they are emitting those bad fusion to Africa. So we are observers. Look at the old vehicles on the road. For that, we actually a dumping. What they dump causes the environmental. So those guys, they should pay us. Actually, we have even punish them and report them to God. They are the ones who are doing harm to this world, not we Africans.
My name is Diego. I'm South Sudanese. For your question, it's a good question. The outsiders should pay the Africans, you know. They are the ones who colonized us, and they have our keys of everything, you know. They are like our controllers.
And last year, the biggest polluting countries promised to slash their greenhouse gas emissions and help poor countries deal with climate change. But few have done so. VOA's Carol Van Dam asked Nasreen El Saim of Sudan, she's the chairperson of the United Nations Secretary General's Youth Advisory Group on Climate Change, if she expects things to be different this time around in Sharm el-Sheikh.
No, I don't think so, and that's for many reasons. First of all, we are now in a by far worse world than we were last year in Glasgow. And secondly, unfortunately, in the different years, and I'm talking even last year and this year and the year before, etc., we inherited like a lack of trust of the promises of that different politicians and also different groups and different negotiators maybe. And now we move into not having hopes or even having requests, but having demands, morals. And the main idea is that maybe this COP is different in the matter of every year they don't say that the COP failed, but they say, well, we reach an agreement on something that it doesn't, at the end, totally means that they reach an agreement to not agree. Maybe they would be more bold this year and say, well, we have a lot of obstacles because they have good excuses like the war in Ukraine, et cetera, et cetera.
In like the pandemic, they've had other excuses, but
Maybe they would be bold enough to actually admit the truth that they failed this COP instead of diplomatic discussions and sentences that mean that they did not do it. They didn't want to admit it.
So as a young person and the head of the UN Secretary General's Youth Advisory Group, what specific commitments are you wanting to see happen this year?
Well, last year the language was diluted. Instead of using phasing out of fossil fuel, they used phase down. So I think going back to phasing out of fossil fuel is going to be a great win. Also, climate finance. The language we are talking about from the Paris Agreement and even before that is 100 billion. And then there's a push for 200 billion. And then there's a push for $1 trillion, actually. Yet we did not even reach the target of the 100 billion, not mentioning the trillion goal. So I think also having movement and progress on the climate finance is going to be very important. I think the last thing for me would be adaptation. And because I think that prevention is always better than cure, I really think that, yes, we need loss and damage at some point.
Well, when you talk about loss and damage, there's been a lot of talk about that. Do you expect to really see some concrete language when the conference is over on loss and damage?
No. I think the main tactic is to have it as an indictment here to maybe make people satisfied. But then what are the achievements on this language? This is going to be the tricky one, and I don't think they will reach an agreement on it this year.
That was Nasreen El Saim. She's the chairperson of the UN Secretary General's Youth Advisory Group on Climate Change. She was speaking to my colleague Carol Van Dam from COP27 in Sharm el-Sheikh. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends? Breakout artists? New releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. And let's go to the Horn of Africa, where a record drought has dried up wide areas of land and vegetation, leaving millions of livestock dead and threatening the survival of both wildlife and people. In Kenya, to reduce the impact of drought, a Dutch conservation group is helping ethnic Maasai restore parched lands through rainwater harvesting. But with a failed rainy season forecast for the fifth time in a row, some are asking whether conservation efforts will be enough. Reporter Juma Majanga has more from Amboseli National Park in Kenya.
God, remember us with rain, sing a group of ethnic Maasai in a traditional prayer song. The Maasai are herders, so the worst drought in 40 years has been shocking, as Kasaine Olesailepi, a Maasai elder, narrates. We have lost nearly all our livestock due to prolonged drought, Sailepi says. As the Maasai, we depend on livestock for livelihoods. That is why we have come together to dig these things to restore our degraded land and bring back the grass for livestock. The Maasai's Kuku Community Group Ranch is located between Kenya's Tsavo and Amboseli National Parks on the southern border with Tanzania, a sacred place reserved for grazing during droughts. But the record drought biting the Horn of Africa has not spared the ranch, as Timothy Lenaya of the Maasai Wilderness Conservation Trust explains.
The community here is totally in a mess, especially this drought that we are in right now. 80% of livestock is normal. So you can imagine the problem is even becoming bigger and bigger with time.
Dutch conservation group Just Dig It is working with the Maasai Wilderness Conservation Trust to help the community restore parched lands. They are digging water bans, semicircular shaped pits that capture rainwater and then reseeding the areas with grass. But they still need rain to get started. Lana Mula, a conservation ecologist, is a senior project manager at Just Dig It, in charge of the Kenyan project.
You know, if there's some rainfall and the seeds germinate and there's no follow-up rains, the seeds die off, and then, you know, your project can be challenged by that. But fortunately, the environment is so well adapted, even with little rain, the seeds germinate, and that's why we are also really trying to maximize the little rains that we get in the environment.
The green pasture is also needed to prevent human-wildlife conflict. Pauline Paul is a resident of Olorika Village. She says what causes elephants to invade farms is lack of water and pasture in the park. So if these grasses grow here, the animals will have their food and water in the park, and we will have peace, she adds. Just Dig It says in the past 2 years, they've built more than 273,000 bulbs, helping to restore nearly 5,000 acres of parched land. Growing and selling hay from grass seed banks has helped employ women, and the trust says the grass restoration is boosting tourism. Lanoi Mitikini was born and brought up in Kukuranj. She now works with the Maasai Wilderness Conservation Trust, helping her community restore their ranch.
Through such projects, we are able to improve the tourism footprint in the area because we have noticed that wildlife come to the restored sites.
As the clouds gather, the Maasai sing for the skies to open and the rains to start coming. Juma Majanga for VOA News, Amboseli, Kenya.
And that's it for this episode of Upfront on the Voice of America. Many thanks to all of you, our listeners, our guests and correspondents from around the world. And for more current news and analysis, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Instagram at VOA Upfront. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead, Africa.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.